Welcome to Save the Teacher Podcast, inspiring teachers every day to make teaching and learning a joy.
Hello and welcome. I'm Becky Ferguson and I'm the Super Teacher Sidekick. Here with our host,
Phyllis Ferguson, the Super Teacher.
I love the fact that we now are okay with calling ourselves Super Teachers.
Well, I don't know if I'm okay with that or not. I certainly wouldn't want anybody to think I think I'm better than them.
I think the best thing that about it is that we've been able to approach it in such a way that we're inspiring other people and empowering other people to remember that they're super teachers.
Yeah, those bookmarks we give out that say, be a hero, read, yeah, and remember the super teacher in you or the superhero in you, I think that's kind of inspiring some of them. There's a real need for that.
Yeah, there really is. It was amazing to me. I know we're going back to talking about our experience at Oregon Reading Association, but there is such a new population. There are so many young teachers.
Oh, my God. Tender, sweet young things.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just look like deer in the headlights, like they're lost. They have no clue what to do. Well, they're surrounded by all of these publishers, wheeling and dealing and passing off all these basils. And it was really an interesting thing.
Buy the next book.
Oh, man. At the end of the day, when all the publishers were going away and they were packing up and they were leaving stuff and giving stuff away and all these young teachers were running around trying to get as many free basils and teacher workbooks and any materials they possibly could, and my heart just went out. As here you were, getting all the free materials, you were too, except for you were pulling out the good books and you were dumping all the rest in the trash.
In the recycle bin.
Oh, true. Recycle.
Yeah, yeah. I was very fortunate because I have some publishers that are very kind to me.
Yes.
And will give me single copies for my classroom and for my kids. But I'm very picky about what I take. So,
yeah,
you know, for instance, the one I did today with kids was a big book on senses that was just amazing.
Yeah, that you got from the Wright Group or something.
No, I got that one, I think, from the rep for, he has about five, his name's Vince Coleman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I think one of the things that I thought was amazing was when I was talking to a student today who was from one of the universities, and she just looked at me and she said, I asked her, well, what did you enjoy at the conference? And she looked at me and she said, I did not know somebody could be as passionate about teaching as you are. You brought that to my mind. And I thought, oh, dear God. And then Beck and I, you know, we heard that thing about the monkeys. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking, the thing about the monkeys, folks, is this. Scientists set up an experiment. They put a big bunch of monkeys at the top of the cage. And they...
A bunch of bananas.
That have serotonin in them.
Bananas
that have serotonin in them that would raise your attitude and change.
Yes, all should know.
Know that. My kids learned that last week at school, that bananas have serotonin and they help your attitude. So when you're having a crappy attitude, eat a banana or two or three or four. Okay, but back to my story. So they put a bunch of bananas up high and they put the monkeys in the cage. And every time a monkey would try to climb up high to get a banana, they would douse them with cold water.
Yeah.
And the monkey would go running down. So then they'd put a new monkey in the cage. And the new monkey would run up there and get dosed with cold water, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many did they do? Like three or four?
Yeah. They put in a new monkey into the cage. And the new monkey who hadn't been there, or with this group of monkeys who had been...
And hadn't seen the dousing.
No, hadn't seen the dousing. With all the monkeys that had been doused with cold water, the new monkey went running to go grab the bunch of bananas, and the monkeys who had been doused pulled him away, pulled mm-hmm. him down off the...
So he wouldn't get sprayed.
Yeah, so he wouldn't get sprayed, trying to protect him,
yeah,
right?
Because we know that pain and pleasure are both motivators, and there was going to be pain, and so they tried to protect him.
So then the experiment continued, and they one by one would introduce a new monkey. And they and every time the new monkey came in, the other monkeys would pull him down. And as they introduced a new monkey, they would take one of the old monkeys that had been sprayed with water away. So, over time of doing this, and the new monkeys would be introduced and they'd get pulled down when they went for the bananas, eventually all the monkeys who originally were in the first test group that had been sprayed with the cold water were no longer in the room, and it was full of new monkeys who had never had that experience. And still yet, whenever they put a new monkey in, and they went to go grab the bananas, the other monkeys would pull them down and would not allow them to get to the bananas. But they did not know why they were doing it. They hadn't had that experience, but they were holding the others back. And It's just absolutely sad.
I know. It almost is tear.
But
tear,
the whole time
I was
listening to that story and hearing that after coming away from this weekend, that weekend I just went, this reminds me a lot of our education system.
Well, I worry about it for young teachers because I know a lot of people like me and like other teachers. You know, I've been in education for, I hate to say this because people out there probably see my picture and think she's a tender, sweet young thing, but I'm not. I've been in education for 35 years, and I have been passionate for 35 years about teaching kids. And I see today that I think what sometimes happens is young people come along, and when they try to reach the bananas, other people that have been hurt say, no, don't go there because you'll get hurt. And what we're doing is being kind and gentle and generous and caring, but pretty soon we don't know why nobody's reaching for the bananas. We're just all not reaching any longer. And I think that starts to happen so that kids, these student teachers that I have or I meet with that say, wow, you're so passionate and you love teaching and you have such innovative ideas and whatever. And I'm like, I can't even understand that because to me, that's who every teacher used to be that I worked with. And all of us were passionate and involved and excited. And then I talk to teachers, you know, like some of the people I talked to today that are saying, I can't deal with what I see happening, and I'm going to retire. And I'm just so saddened by that. So I kind of, as we were talking, I was talking to a bunch of teachers today and sharing with them that I did research in New Zealand. I got one of the original Goals 2000 grants, and the federal government paid me and two other people to go to New Zealand to investigate why their literacy standards are so high, but also to look at, because we were looking at, why did they have such a successful literacy and why were we borrowing from their literacy development so much? And then also to look at then what was the education system that those teachers came from that made that possible for them? Because we didn't see that same replication. And there were a couple really primary things that I found from my trip to New Zealand that I thought maybe I should share. Because maybe that'll help us to quit pulling people down to be monkeys with us and not go after the bananas. Was one of the things that I saw was that every teacher I talked to had the same philosophy. And New Zealand's a country about the size of California and has a lot of people and a lot of teachers. And all of their teachers are trained in the same philosophy. And they've been doing it for a long time. And it's based on oral language development, Brian Camborne's model of the 7 conditions of language learning. And I really want to encourage you to look at those: immersion, demonstration, approximation, employment, responsibility, feedback, and the last one is engagement. There's 8 of them now. And I really want to encourage you to look at that, because when I would go into their classrooms and ask teachers, why do you do what you do? I would watch a lesson and I would say, now why did you do that? Because they would do things that were different from what I do in my classroom. They would take me to their lesson plan book and they would say, because it fits under this condition, maybe I'm demonstrating or maybe I'm immersing, or maybe, which was really amazing to me, responsibility. They gave kids amazing amounts of responsibility. I will never forget. One little guy had written, and he put it in front of the teacher, and she says, is this your best? And he said, yes, Mom. And she said, get your portfolio. And so he went over and got his portfolio and brought it over and laid open a page, and he looked at the page that he had written before, and he looked at the page that he had done now, and he says, I best do it again. And he picked up his paper and went off. He took the responsibility for what he had done and knew that it was his responsibility and his opportunity to do that. And I saw time after time the responsibility given to children. And instead of doing 4 kids, they did with kids. Instead of doing 2 kids, they let kids do. And that was so amazing to me. One of the other things that I was so amazed with was their teacher training, was that they would go 6 weeks at university and then 6 weeks in the classroom with a mentor teacher. And then 6 weeks at university to debrief and to talk about what they had done and to do coursework. And then 6 weeks in the classroom. And then what was really amazing to me was that they were not certified until they had been out teaching for 2 full years. 2 years. They had been doing a real teacher's job for 2 years. The first year, for the first 4 days of the week, they would teach. And on Fridays, or one day of the week, their deputy principal would come in and take their classroom. so the deputy principal could firsthand experience the organization the teacher had made, the lesson plans the teacher was involved with, see the management that they had set up so that they had that feedback, and that this teacher was then allowed to go work with her mentor, observe other people, and get feedback on what she was doing with other folks. Then this next year, they had 5 days a week that they taught, but they were still under a mentorship situation. And then at the end of those 2 years, they were finally offered their certification. Whoa! What a way to really train people. My gosh! So then as we were talking, I was thinking, you know, and in that country, teachers were revered. I mean, they were really seen as just as important as the doctor and the lawyer and those people that we in the United States think of as the elite, and that we as teachers are, well, we're the servants. And so I began to think, you know, what can we do? One of the teachers said to me, we need to change education. We need to change it. And I'm saying, yep, we have to look at why education was established in the beginning, and are we following that? And we are. And that's not what we want. We want an education that creates thinkers. And in the beginning, it was to create people who would be able to do menial jobs and to follow directions and to vote their way, you know, to be able to be a part of the democratic society. But they really wanted public education so they could control the minds of people. And now we're saying we want people who think, and yet we're trying to teach them in the same way as we taught people not to think. You know, just burp back the right answer, just give it back. Well, I kind of came up with four things. So can I share those with you?
Sure.
Okay. I think there are four things that we have to do in order to get the esteem that we need and to really begin to turn around education. So I kind of have this, all right, guys, let's get our rears in gear and make a difference. Okay.
So if we're going to do it, you got
to
do it from the inside out.
Yeah, you
There's
have
no
to.
Way you're going to be able to go from the outside in and
no.
just say, okay, government, why don't you fix it, government?
Yeah, oh my
you
gosh.
You fix everything else for us.
Nothing works when they fix it.
Oh, I know.
It's
unless
like
you want a whole bunch of $200 toilet seats.
And $5,000 hammers. I mean, I really don't want that. Well, I think the first thing is that in order for us as teachers to have the esteem that we need to act professional. You know, we need to act professional. We need to talk about our profession in such a way that we are admired. We need to show that we are professionals, that we aren't the servants or the slaves or the babysitters, and that we need to show parents we have reasons for what we're doing, and here are the reasons. I think that ongoing evaluation in our classrooms, not to prove assessment, not assessment that you ship off to somebody else, but that assessment so that when I meet with parents, I say, you know, I observed John doing this, and that showed me that he knows this, and this is what I do. It's what I call assessment that informs practice. That's a professional to me. That's a person that really uses what they know about kids and about learning and informs their practice and says to parents, here's what I'm doing and here's what you can do. And all of a sudden, parents are going, whoa, I didn't know you knew that much about my child. I didn't know you cared. And all of a sudden, we become much more professional. We have to take that stance. We have to become professional leaders so that parents say to us, you know, so often I hear, I'll go to cocktail parties and I get this big kick out of people because when they find out you're in education, they always are like, well, anybody can teach, or, you know, well, I've often thought about being a teacher, and it's like, what makes you think you'd be a good teacher, you know? Well, some people it's like, well, I haven't been able to do anything else with my life, so I think I'll go into teaching. And my belief is only the best should go into teaching. I love it when people graduate from Harvard and say, I'm going to be a teacher. And it's like, yes. And people go, oh, but you've got a degree from Harvard. You should go do something important. Well, to me, teaching is the most important thing we do besides raising kids as parents. The second thing I think is that we have really failed as educators to police our ranks. If there's a teacher next to you or around you or that you teach with on a daily basis who's not doing their job, who's a failing kids, who's abusing kids either verbally or physically, or just because they're neglecting them, the last person on earth that should support them is you. Now, you can do that in a lot of different ways. You can help get rid of them by saying, you know, I think maybe you ought to think about a new career. Why don't you listen to Dan Miller in 48 Days to the Work You Love? Or to say, you know, you have this gift in this area. Let's see if we can work with it. Or maybe you can help change what they're doing by inviting them to be a part of your classroom or valuing something they do so that they then will see that they need to value something you do. It's kind of my secret is you kill them with kindness.
Yeah, this isn't a judgmental thing.
No, this isn't a judgmental thing. It's you know, I saw you doing that and that was really cool. And then you share that, you take that from them and you use it in some way so they begin to trust you and that you're not just sitting around saying, oh, that teacher's crappy and exercising your, what I call, you know, passive-aggressiveness on them, you know.
Teachers are very passive-aggressive.
Oh my gosh, you know, we talk more about people than we do to them. And many times that person realizes they're not doing a good job. They're frustrated, they're fearful, and they don't know how to be different. And so we need to police our ranks and make sure it's different. And if that person can't change, and we've given them, I had this principal I worked with once, and teachers used to be really afraid if they got transferred into his building. And I always said, I'm not afraid to be in his building. I'm a good teacher. You can put me anywhere you want. I'll do a good job. And he won't mess with me because my parents will have a fit if he does. And what I saw was, as I was teaching courses for the university, was that he would come in, get a teacher that people considered to be a not very good teacher. They would transfer her to his building or him to his building. And then he would set up a program with them for staff development and to change. You know, he'd be very deliberate and very intentional and very objective, which you have to be, and say, okay, you don't have the management that you have is not working, your kids are out of control, so let's take a classroom management class. And what was cool was he would walk in and take the class with the person. Can you imagine a principal taking the time to take a class, an evening class, with this person? And I knew as I was teaching that the reason for that was so that he knew what that person was supposed to be learning and could go back into the classroom and say, okay, I know you're learning this, let's see how you use it. Because he needed to have the ammunition to say, you know, I think you need to choose something else, because he either needed to be able to say, I've given you the skills and now you can do it and congratulations, we've improved you, or you've tried to get the skills and it's just not who you are. You may care about kids, but you don't have enough discipline or control or an understanding and organization. You know, some people are just flaky. They don't have organization. And some people are just tired and angry, and they take it out on children. And no child should have to go into a classroom and be fearful. I was tutoring a little boy once, and he was talking about what a difficult time he was having in his classroom. And I said to him, well, does your teacher like you? And he looked at me back as if that was the most foreign thing on earth, that his teacher should like him. So I went with the parents to a conference with the teacher, and she said pretty good things about him. And, you know, we talked about what I was doing and what she needed to be doing and stuff. And finally I said to her, I said, well, do you like him? She says, oh yeah, he's a very nice boy. I said, would you tell him that? Would you please just tell this child that you like him? Because he really doesn't think you do, because he seems to be not fitting what you need, and you've never said, I really like you. Could you just try that a little, you know? And I just think that those people that have sometimes gotten to the place that they're so busy concentrating on curriculum or concentrating on their own pain and sadness and discomfort, don't let kids know anything positive about themselves. And I don't think those people should be in those classrooms abusing children. We need to police our ranks. Doctors are supposed to be policed by other doctors. The Bar Association, if they get a complaint, they take that person to the carpet and they can be disbarred, and they know that. And they have to do so many hours of training every year or so to keep up their bar, you know, their credentials. We need to police our own ranks. And I call on us as teachers not to advocate for mediocre people, only the best. Well, the third thing I think that we need to do is to promote our passion. How many of us promote to other people, to our kids, to the people in our community? Do we go to the school board and say, I am so excited about what I'm doing, let me share it with you? Do we call the newspaper and say, come into my classroom and see this cool thing I'm doing? You know, you do something cool, you get them in there. You got to promote your passion and your position in the classroom, or people are going to think, well, they're not doing anything. What do those people do over there? Why do we need to vote for that levy? They're not doing anything. We are our own worst enemies. You know, I think that every teacher probably ought to take a class in PR, you know, public relations. How do you get people on your side and keep them there?
And that goes back into why teachers should be entrepreneurs.
That's right. It's the same kind of thing. And the last thing I think that's really important is We have to position ourselves in our communities as contributors and as authorities. I am so proud of Oasis School, and I am so proud of what I have learned by being a teacher there and a contributor there, because our goal is to teach every child to be a contributor. So that means that I'm involved in my community. I'm doing food drives with my kids. I'm going to the senior citizens' places and singing and performing with them. I'm on committees in the community to try to get my school involved. I'm seen in the community as a shaker and a mover in the area of environmental education and you know, those kinds of things because of our restoration project that we do. And I just think we've got to position ourselves as teachers that we are contributors, so that people don't just look at us as, well, those are those people that go to work every day and they spend their days babysitting kids, which there's nothing wrong with a babysitter, but I'm a teacher and I contribute. And we see ourselves and we position ourselves as contributors back so that our society realizes that they can't do without us. They can't program somebody or a virtual classroom to take our place. That every child in every classroom needs to have the pervasive caring, the innovative practice, the inspirational teaching, the involvement in their lives and in who they are, and the encouragement to achieve that can only come from human contact. And so I think, you know, I really felt after we heard the thing about the monkeys and the bananas, and after I talked to my teachers that I worked with this summer that are now in classrooms teaching this fall, their first jobs, and they're being mentored, and some of them are discouraged, and some of them have great mentors, and some of them don't, and some young teachers are saying, oh, I don't know if I can do, you know, and I'm saying, you don't do everything I do your first year. You take it small. You bite off one bite of the elephant at a time, and in a few years, you'll be able to take it all. But what the people that surround you need to do, because they're supposed to be your support system, is they need to be there to encourage you, to support you, to say, yeah, maybe you failed in that and that was kind of a mess up, but keep going. You'll do it differently the next time.
Well, you know, and it's not just that. When I was listening to that, the experiment with the monkeys, one of the things that came into my mind was dealing with programs, dealing with mandates. And so many teachers that I've heard say over and over again, especially lately, but they keep doing this to me. You know, and I sit there and I'm like, yeah, but you keep pulling them away from the bananas, you know? it's like they keep doing this to me. Well, you know what? You can still keep fighting. You can still keep trying. You don't have to lay down and take it.
You know, and I think, and what we're not advocating is, we're not saying, okay, when they give you something or they tell you to, you know, they encourage you to teach in a certain way or whatever, to say, heck no, and walk out or whatever, that doesn't get you there. But what you do is you do such a wonderful, terrific job. You do what they need you to do the best you can, the quickest you can, and then keep expanding that joy in your classroom so that people like the California Teacher of the Year say, whoa, everything's so much better and so much
beyond.
Oh, I'm
sure that he's
jumped
through the hoops.
Certainly.
I'm sure that he took...
I did.
He went in and they gave him the program and he probably looked at it, took the little bits and pieces that he had to do to get done to pass the thing, and then moved on to the good stuff and did what he had to do. And, you know, and I think it's more the mindset that I'm talking about in terms of, oh, well, they did this to me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm going to pull that person down. Well, the next rank that's coming up, we've got teachers coming out of, going into the classroom that are young, new teachers who all they know is the test. All they know is they don't know how to do things without cutesy materials, you know, and how to make their own and get by so that they can actually make it about the kids and making it meaningful and purposeful and engaging.
Yeah, and I think part of that comes from our consumer society that we're in today. And, you know, I often say, I remember my parents, I used to get the biggest kick out of them. It was always, well, you didn't live when the time was that. You know, you didn't live through the Depression, so this is why we save every piece of string. And this is why we save every piece of tin. You know, all of those kind of things. And I remember as a kid thinking, yes, Mom, and I don't want to ever live through the Depression. Well, I kind of feel like sometimes, excuse me, that I'm saying to these young teachers, but you didn't live through. But what I really need to be doing is illustrating for them how, as an innovative teacher, Mm-hmm. I can take nothing and make something.
Yeah.
And how I don't have to have the best and the brightest yeah. and the coolest, but that I have to have the most exciting and the thrilling and the most child-centered yeah. and all of those kinds of things.
One of my favorite one of my favorite comments that we got, because we asked people to write comments after your sessions at RA, one of my favorite comments that I got was, good, now I can go and teach phonemic awareness and my kids won't be bored to death. And it was like, why would you ever be teaching anything
why that, would you want to teach anything that bored them?
That was going to be boring. You know, it was going to bore them to death.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you got to stop pulling them off those bananas.
And so I think that's kind of the reason I wanted to talk today about what I did, because my heart is, I believe that the best is yet to come in education. I weave technology. I love technology, and I weave it into my classroom. I pulled a podcast down the other day from a MySpace page called Why You Should Eat Fruits. Why Should Eat Fruits? And it came from England, and so it was this microphone that was stuck in a bowl of fruit, and then each of the fruits had a different accent and a different way of talking, and they told us all about the phytochemicals and how they, what they did for you, and that's where I learned about bananas and how they have serotonin and make you happier, and I learned about strawberries and the fact that they whiten your teeth, and all of those kind of things. But I brought that into my classroom, and it was a great innovative practice. And my kids, often we use technology to have them create PowerPoints and webcasts and all of those kinds of things. But I can't depend on that technology to reach into the hearts of my kids. Mm-hmm. It's a machine.
Yeah.
And I think that is the difference when we talk about meaningful, purposeful, and engaging, is that does what you do with kids have meaning for them? Do they connect? Do they see, oh, that's me. Today I was doing some writing with a child, with children, and the kids brought in their own schema, and I said, that's so cool, because you just made a life-to-text connection. Mm-hmm. Terrific. And I accepted their answers. And then I really believe the kids have to see the purpose for what they do, and that's what we talk about when we talk about meaningful, purposeful on this shirt that I'm wearing. And the last thing is engagement, and I keep saying this time and time again, you can put me in a car, and I can turn on the gas. And I can turn that key, and I can pump my foot, and pump my foot, and pump my foot, but I'm not going to go anywhere
yeah.
until I engage the drive. And the drive in our children are their hearts and minds.
Absolutely.
A wise teacher makes teaching and learning a joy.
And that's why we're here.
That's right.
To inspire you at save-the-teacher.com to make teaching and learning a joy every single day. So join us in our mission to save the teacher, spread the word, pass this podcast and all the rest of the podcasts that we have out there along to all your friends and colleagues all over the world, all over the nation, and let's start reforming it from within.
Start Be a within, hero.
Yeah, start within yourself first, because you can't change the world unless you change yourself. You look into yourself, and then let's start the revolution from inside, and you are your best advocate. You are your children's best advocates. And don't just decide that it's too bad, so I'm going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Make a choice to make
you.
It better. And it's your choice, and it's your work that you get to do.
Yeah. So. Release your inner hero.
Yeah.
And one of the ways they could do that would be, ooh, here comes the advertisement. Come this summer and be in Ashland with us and stay and play. Yeah.
Come see some plays and eat great Ashland food and be inspired. You will not regret the time that you get to spend with Phyllis and her amazingly fun and joyous humor, as well as her practical implementation of all those little things that you never thought you knew how to do, you know, like two-finger voices and donut circles and... I don't know what other
partner prattle and all sorts of things and how to organize them and take those five pillars, or really the seven with oral language and motivation, and blend them with organization and management so that you really make it work. And so we'd like you to check out our invitation to optimize literacy in the K-2 classroom.
Yes.
Here in Ashland. We're also putting out, I thought this was cool, Beck, that you decided to put out a place where people could vote if they were interested in maybe us offering a three through six or seven or eight of the class, so that people who teach older children could find out how to put it all together, because I keep getting complaints that, you know, you're helping out those K-2 teachers with that, Phyllis, but we know you've taught third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade.
I think the coolest part, too, is that on Monday night, if you don't want to go out and enjoy Ashland, the town, that you're going to be doing personal coaching, life coaching with people, and do question and answers one-on-one with teachers. So they'll have an opportunity to speak with you one-on-one. And
yeah, because all I am is a real person.
Yeah. But remember, space is limited, so get in soon. But enough of our advertising. Go and make teaching and learning a joy. Until next time, this is Becky, your super teacher psychic.
And Phyllis, your super teacher.
And welcome to Save.